Hi, this is Braden Holpe.
Hey, this is Tanner the Bulldozer Bozer.
Hi, this is Brian Burke from Toronto, Ontario.
This is Daryl Sutter.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carly Agro from Sportsnet Central.
This is Jay Onright.
This is Quick Dick McDick coming to you from Tufnell, Saskatchewan.
Hey, everybody. My name is Theo Fleury.
This is Kelly Rudy.
This is Corey Cross.
This is Wade Redden.
This is Jordan Tutu.
My name is Jim Pattison.
Hey, it's Ron McLean, Hockey Night in Canada and Rogers Hometown Hockey, and welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. We got a great one on tap for you today. One that I finally get to check off the old bucket list. One of the names that's been on there, and it's finally checked. But before we get there, let's get to today's episode sponsors. First off, Carly Clausen and Windsor Plywood, builders of the podcast studio table. For everything wood, these are the guys, whether we're talking mantels, decks, windows, doors, or sheds. When you want quality, stop in and see these folks at Windsor Plywood, or just hop on your phone. I mean, Instagram, Facebook, take a look at their stuff online, and you can just see the quality. 780-875-9663, give them a call, and they'll get you hooked up. Jen Gilbert and team want you to know, for over 40 years, since 1976, the dedicated realtors of Coldwell Banker, Cityside Realty, have served Lloydminster and the surrounding area. They're passionate about our community, and they pride themselves on giving back through volunteer opportunities and partnerships as often as they can. We know that home is truly where the awesomeness happens. Coldwell Banker, Cityside Realty, for everything real estate, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 780-875-3343. Clinton team over at Trophy Gallery. Championship belts, custom medals, die-cast signage, name tags and engravings on Yetis and Brewmates, business awards in crystal and glass. They ship Canada-wide, and if you go online at trophygallery.ca, they got over 5,000 products, and if you use Newman promo code Newman, you save 15% any sport, anytime, from bodybuilding to hockey. Visit trophygallery.ca. HSI Group, they are the local oil field burners and combustion experts that can help make sure you have a compliant system working for you. The team also offers security, surveillance, and automation products for residential, commercial, livestock, and agricultural applications. They use technology to give you peace of mind so you can focus on the things that truly matter. Stop in a day and visit Kim or Brody at 3902 52nd Street, or give them a call, 306-825-6310. Clay Smiley, Profit River. Profit River is a retailer of firearms, optics, and accessories serving all of Canada. They specialize in importing firearms from the United States, hard-to-find calibers, rare firearms, special editions. Check them out at profitriver.com. Gartner Management is a Lloydminster-based company specializing in all types of rental properties to help meet your needs, whether you're looking for a small office like yours truly or a 6,000-square-foot commercial space. Give Wade Gartner a call at 780-808-5025. Shout out to the team at Read and Write for the SMP billboard. We're talking about, of course, Miss Deanna Wandler and her amazing crew there. They've done amazing work. If you want any outdoor advertising done, check out Read and Write. Give them a call today. If you're heading into any of these businesses, make sure you let them know you heard about them on the podcast. We'd love to have you on here. If you're interested in advertising, head to seannewmanpodcast.com. In the top right corner, hit the contact button and send me your info. We got lots of different options and want to find something that can work for the both of us. Now let's get on to that T-Bar one, Tale of the Tape. Originally from Kingston, Ontario, played one game in the NHL for the Boston Bruins, over 700 games in the minor leagues. He spent 5 years as the coach of the Boston Bruins, where he made the Stanley Cup Finals twice. He spent 1 year as the head coach of the Colorado Rockies. In 1981, he was hired by the CBC as a color commentator, but it would be a year later, in 1982, where he made his big impression on his debut on Coach's Corner. For the next 37 years, he co-hosted the show, becoming part of the fabric of the Canadian culture. I'm talking about Mr. Don Cherry. So buckle up. Here we go.
Hey, this is Don Cherry. Now, don't forget, listen to Sean's broadcast. It's one of the best.
Well, welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. Today, I am joined by Mr. Don Cherry. Sir, how's it going?
Very good. Going very good. I'm doing my podcast now and the Twitter, and having a lot of fun. So thank you very much for having me on the show.
Appreciate you hopping on, Don. You know, a lot of Western Canada always, we think awfully high about your views. And I know a lot of people always wonder, how is Mr. Cherry these days? The podcast is a roaring success for yourself, The Grapevine. How's been the change from going, you know, live broadcasts every Saturday night and more to doing the podcast?
Well, I do miss doing Coach's Corner. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I look forward to it. Well, when you do it for over 40 years, you sort of look forward to it. I do miss it. There's no doubt about it, but you have to do what you have to do. And I did what I had to do, and I felt the same way. And I think a lot of people from the West feel the same way as I do. And the podcast, my son, Timothy, and my daughter, and Dell, my grandson, he's the guy that makes the sound so good. And we go over and we sit around and just shoot the breeze and have a lot of fun. And Tim has a lot of questions. He has the questions there. I don't quite understand it quite as I should, but he understands it. And I have a lot of fun. And the Twitter is we were picked one of the best podcasts of 2020. And my Twitter has over 800,000. So I still have a lot of fun. And long as it's fun, that's the main thing.
Well, I gotta say, Don, getting you on before Christmas. I'm sure you get this all the time, but growing up in the Newman household, one of the staples of Christmas morning was we'd give Dad a box of turtles, followed quickly by in his stocking Rock'em Sock'em. And so the Newman household every morning on Christmas Day was eating chocolate, watching your Rock'em Sock'em videos. And we did that for, you know, up until obviously I moved out of mom and dad's house. But even after we'd come back from college, me and my older brother, Harley, we still did it until, you know, we finally were both married and had kids of our own and that kind of thing. But I assume you get that all the time. But you entered everybody's houses on Christmas morning, at least around these parts. And for you to come on and be on December 23rd, right before Christmas, is as close to I can get as bringing Rock'em Sock'em back for the people here in Lloydminster and you know, surrounding communities.
Well, isn't that nice of you to say that? Again, it was my son that did it, Timothy, and we did it for over 30 years. We thought 30 years was enough, and I don't think too many people have a CD anymore, but we did it for 30 years, and Tim, again, was instrumental in doing it all, and I had a lot of fun doing it. We did it. I remember I remember one time I went and I tried on, wore a kilt one time, and I picked up the wrong kilt, and Rose was small, and holy smokes, I haven't put on this much weight, and I couldn't put on the kilt. So we put it on backwards. It was really funny. We did put it on backwards, and we did it in the Hall of Fame. I forget which one that was, but it was a lot. We had a lot of fun doing it, and I'm glad Hardy and you listened to it. And we did have a lot. Again, if you don't have fun doing it, then there's no sense in doing it. But it was that was a lot of work for 30 years. We did it for 30 years and had a lot. And Timothy was the head guy that did it. Did that too.
Well, you guys did an exceptional job. We were at work. We pulled it up on YouTube there the other day. It's honestly impresses me about going back to those videos. I didn't realize we quote that all the time, right? Like I had Cheevers, Jerry Cheevers, obviously your favorite goaltender on the podcast a little while back, and I was explaining to him. One of my favorite stories that you've said is about Bobby Orr embarrassing the Atlanta Flames, where he goes end to end on a penalty kill. Nobody wants to go behind the net, and he ends up going, and then, you know, he tucks the goal in. And we got watching it, and I can't believe how many things you say in Rock'em Sock'em that as a kid you internalized, and, you know, don't lay on the ice, you know, tea time, all the things that are in there. Became so much ingrained in the Canadian hockey culture, I guess.
Yeah, we had, like I say, with the a lot of kids listened to it, and if you notice, there was never any swearing in it. The same as the podcast, there's never any swearing. And I did my books. I did four books with number one author in the book. I don't understand that. I just told a story to Al Strachan. You remember Al? He was used to write for the Gazette, and I think his son. But no, it they were all kid. People weren't afraid to have the kids listen to the Rock'em Sock'ems or the books or anything like that. There's never and the podcast. There's never any swearing in it because I know a lot of kids listen to it, and I just don't go for it. I mean, when I played and when I coached, I guess I was pretty bad with the swearing and that. I'll tell you a funny story. We're in I was just thinking of it the other day. I was running Maple Leaf Gardens. Believe it or not, when it first started in the gardens and I coached, the people used to go and get a hot dog. They'd be in amongst the bench, and they had to put police at the other end to stop them. Wait till the commercial will come on. And I remember this older lady, it was about 12 rows up, and I was coaching the Bruins, and she said, "Cherry, you got a filthy mouth." And oh, she was about my mother's age. And did I ever feel bad? So I went up, and I sat in, and while the game was going on, I'm talking to her, and I said to her, "No, ma'am, you've heard that language before." She says, "Yeah, but I didn't pay $200 for it." So we, it was, as you know, and as Harley knows, that there's never any swearing in at Rock'em Sock'ems, and I just don't believe in it. And when I did my banquets too, I remember I was in Lloydminster. I did a banquet, and I knew some of the other guys used to swear, used to say that F word all the time. I don't know. I think they just did it to, I don't know why they did it, but they did it. But I never did, and I think that's why a lot of kids watch Rock'em Sock'em not, because it was a tough. I think we only had three fights in it. The whole thing. Everybody thinks the Rock'em Sock'em was banging and you know a lot, but it wasn't. It was teaching the kids safety and the whole deal. So I was quite thrilled that that we lasted 30 years. Not too many people last 30 years and something.
Well, I tell you what, you're earning brownie points with my mother right now, because from time to time, I may have the odd colorful comment come out on the podcast, and my mother always listens. She always gives me hell about it, Don, and I have to apologize.
Well, your mother knows, but always listen to your mother. You'll never go wrong, and that's that. I'm glad she agrees with me.
Now, growing up, Don, did you see, you know, I mean, nobody could see how, I highly doubt you could see that, wow, you're going to do all these amazing things. You're going to have this career that is, you know, you were voted number 7 of most popular Canadians, most famous Canadians, something like that. And I remember thinking, like, just think about that. A guy who commentates is one of the most influential Canadians of all time. But when you were a young guy, did you ever go, like, wow, I want to make the NHL? I'm sure you're like every other Canadian. But as a young guy, did you see that coming?
No, I tell you the truth. I was I was very stupid when I was young, that I never paid attention in school. I don't know what I was thinking, and all I did was want to play hockey. And I did play hockey, but I played in the American League. And you know, when I was through, I had no trade, I had no education, I couldn't get a job, and I'm going to tell you the truth. This is the truth, honest truth there. Lloydminster Hospital and that, though, you know, I know you're doing it, so I'm going to tell you the truth, that I was unemployed. I couldn't get a job anywhere. I think it was when 19, I forget, but it was, anyhow, it was a recession, it was in down the States. I was living in Rochester, New York, and I established myself as the world's worst car salesman, and I tried to sell cars, but I just couldn't approach people cold. I just couldn't. I was just, I don't know why I was too shy or something. I don't know, whatever it was. And I was down and out, and I really was. And I know what it's like to be unemployed, and it's tough. It's tough. I was 6 months. I couldn't get a job, and I had a family and the whole deal. And I said to the Lord, I remember one day I laid down. I go to have a nap. And I said, I don't even deserve a nap. And that's how bad I felt about myself. And I said, I remember I got my knees and I said to the Lord, I said, is this it? I mean, I'm 36 years old and I'm finished. I swear to God, honestly, it's hard to believe, but a voice said to me, get back into hockey. And I never thought about getting back into hockey. And I made a comeback. I'm going to hurry this through. I made a comeback, and halfway through the season, I got made coach. And 3 years from that, I was coach of Bobby Orr. And I remember getting on my hands and knees, or on my knees, and saying to the Lord, I said, "Am I finished?" And I mean, I couldn't get a job. I had no trade. I had nothing, and nothing was going on. Nothing was going right. And from that day on, 3 years from that year, that day on, I was coaching Bobby Orr. So, you know, it just shows you to never give up, because nobody was lower than I was. There, you know, no trade and no education, no nothing. And it was a tough time to go on. And I know a lot of guys are out west having a tough time with the oil and all that and everything like that. So don't give up. Trust in the Lord and it'll work out.
You're talking, you went back. I think that's that right there, what you just said, is probably every, there's a lot of people out here, Don, that need to hear that, because it is some pretty low times out west. Specifically in our area, it's a, you know, an agricultural town, but oil and gas, the energy sector has really done wonders to this part of the world, and it has been taking a beating, not only this year but years previous, and everything going on. There's a lot of people hurting, so I appreciate you sharing that, because I think that'll speak to a lot of people. It's
well, I don't talk about that too much, but I feel that there are some guys out there that are, and I know how they feel, because there's you know, it's a tough when you got a family, and yeah, I had no money coming in, but the Lord, I know it's easy for me to say, but it was a tough deal. And 3 years from then, I was coaching Bobby Orr. Can you imagine that? And you know Bobby Orr, I mean, I remember I stood on the Boston Gardens and you know, holy smokes, is this really happening to me? And so don't give up. But I remember I remember standing in the Boston Gardens. And you know, it's a funny thing. I got asked by one of the owners of Rochester, but at the time it was Bob Clark, and I remember his name, Bob Clark, and he asked me to coach the high school team. Well, I remember I was just as nervous. Coach of the high school team, because that's how they get started, you know, coach minor hockey, you know, you change the lines and have the practice and everything. So when I got made coach halfway through the season in Rochester, I was ready to go, because I changed lines and I did everything in high school. So it was a tough deal, but you never know what's going to happen. You got to keep plugging.
Oh, I 100% agree. I find it very fascinating, Don. You know, all your success that you've had, you know, in my lifetime, all I've ever known you to be is a successful guy. I think that's a lot of people. I was born in 86, so by the time I was old enough to remember anything, Rock'em Sock'ems were already rolling along. I think the first one came out in 89. So, you know, and you were already on Coach's Corner by the time, you know, like that was just part of the fabric of our society back then, and Saturday nights and watching you and Ron McLean. I had Ron on midsummer, and I was saying it was such a nice balance of society, I figured. Skip Craik, who used to be a Boston Bruin just before you got there.
Oh, I remember Skip, yeah.
Great guy. And he was on the podcast, and he said something to me, Don, that has absolutely stuck with me since he said it. I can never shake it. Is hockey mirrors society. And I always thought Coach's Corner mirrored society. You had Ron with his ideals, and you had Don with his ideals, and they were such a perfect complement. I always thought, because, and that's what made it entertaining, right? You both weren't bashing.
Well, I still don't know. Somebody asked me about that, and I said, I still don't know. I just went out and spoke like the regular guy, and I tried to get things that I thought people would be interested in, And you know, it was 40 years. I think it was 40 years we were going. I think I was going on 1980, I think it was, and this year got terminated. But I went from 1980, and when I first started out, I used to do color, and I used to favor the Boston Bruins too much, and they told me, you can't favor the Boston Bruins.
You can't be doing that, Don.
Yeah, I got told that. And my last day of color, Craig McTavish scored the overtime goal or something, or sort of goal. And I said, we're beating them, Montreal. I said, we're beating them tonight. That was the last time I ever did color. So at the end, they said, well, Ralph Mellenby, who liked me, I guess, and he says, we'll just put him on at the end of the first period, give him 3 or 4 minutes. And how could he get in trouble there? Little did he know.
Do you remember the first time you got that little segment, Don? And was it well received? Like, what was the first coach's corner like?
I don't remember. I was on with Dave Hodge. I don't think Dave liked me very much, and I don't think he really wanted to be on. But I was on with Dave Hodge, but I don't remember the very first one. But I remember the very first one with Ron McLean. Ron had a habit of all looking down all the time, and they told him you stop looking down. You got to stare. You know, got to talk to the people you're being interviewed. And I remember the very first one I was doing with them. There was a great big, you know, when you stare something at something. He was staring at me in the eye, and a great big tear running down his. Holy, is this guy going to cry every time he does coach's corner? But I remember that one. That was a funny one. And he didn't quite get it the first year or so. He was very serious, you know. And I think he comes from Red Deer, and I used to kid him all the time and everything. And he didn't quite get it. Then all of a sudden, he snapped into it and got carried. But I mean, the first year anyhow, he didn't quite get it. He's very very sensitive guy, and I know he comes from Red Deer. He thinks very highly of Red Deer and all the time. He's always talking about Red Deer. So, yeah, that was the first one. I remember the very first one I did with him. That was the first, but I don't remember the first one I did with Dave Hodge. I can't remember. I was always in trouble all the time. I don't know why, but I always was. They were going to fire me about 10 times. I don't know how I ever lasted for 40 years is beyond me. I remember the one guy, he was the head of the thing, and he said, and we had a meeting, I remember it was down at the Blue Jays. They had didn't want to meet me in his office, I guess. And he says, my legacy is going to be, I'm retiring in 3 months. He says, my legacy is going to be is that I get rid of you. I said, we'll see. And never did. But I know he'd like to. The whole bunch of them would have liked to got rid of me. And I don't know how I lasted 40 years. Now that I get talking about it, I really don't. I was supposed to be gone 10. But I thought, and that thing they had with the greatest Canadian, it was called the greatest Canadian. Well, I don't consider myself the greatest Canadian. I think it was I was on TV. I think they knew me. That's the only reason that they voted for me. And I remember a guy out west had a license, had the Wild Rose from Alberta. And I still have it hanging up. It said, vote for, and it had a cherry on it. And I framed it, and I still have it in my office. It really made me feel good. So, no, I don't remember the first one with Hodge, but I remember the first one with Ron.
Did you ever, you know, you are a guy who says what is on his mind, and that is a rare characteristic these days. My grandmother used to be the same way. She used to just tell it. There was no splitting words, right? It was, I say what I mean. And today is a little different than that. Did you ever get accustomed to some of the backlash you received on? Was that like, I highly doubt it was enjoyable, but I assume after like the first 10 times you're like, yeah, this is going to send them running, right? Like, I mean, because as many people as that loved you, there was always the opposite that just wanted to hate on you. You mentioned a guy wanting to get rid of you in his career. Like that, I mean, that's got to be almost like a surreal experience to have somebody say that.
No, I remember my very first write-up that was bad write-up about me was a good friend of mine, and I thought he was a good friend. Well, he still is. Or he was. It was a writer for The Sun, I think. No, and it wasn't The Sun. It was The Star, Toronto Star, and it was Trent Frayn. I remember, holy smoke, did he give it to me? I didn't know. I had never had a bad write-up before. And I didn't know if I could go on. I didn't know if I could go on Coach's Corner, to tell you the truth. It was so bad. I mean, you know, I forget what it was, but it was my first. And then I got toughened on that one. Then I got a little tougher and a little tougher. And actually, tell you the truth, I didn't mind them at all. I didn't. They wanted to write bad things about me. I remember one lady that writes. She's still writing, by the way. She lists bad 10 things, and one of them was the misogynist. I don't even know what a misogynist was. I thought it was massaging people. And and what else did she call me? A troglodyte. I said, what the hell's a troglodyte? And I found it was a little midget, I guess, that lived underneath a bridge. So she was reaching for a lot of things I was. Anyhow, to answer your question, I got used to them. And the people that didn't like me, I just took them where they came from. They were left wing that did not like me, and I didn't like them, so it didn't make any difference. Didn't bother me. But the first one, holy smokes, I remember I didn't know whether I could go back if I could do hockey in Canada again, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that over a lifetime of having that, you eventually become accustomed to it, but like all of us, the first one must have stung. It must have been a dagger to you.
It was. It was. I didn't even, and I think it was Saturday morning, and I didn't know if I could go on television that night. It hurt so bad because I didn't. Didn't think I was that bad. And holy smokes! And then, like I say, you get used to them. And I got a lot of bad ones. And but I look forward. After a while, you look forward to them, and it doesn't hurt you at all. But the first one, if you've never had it before, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, I certainly can't say I'm pretty, as you can tell from 20 minutes, Don. I'm pretty relaxed. I consider myself a young guy at 34, which to the 20-year-old I'm old. But I look at you, Don, and I go, you're a guy who's lived a lot of life. You've seen a lot of things and been around some very interesting people. Had a fortunate run in your career, I would say. And I just mean that in the sense that you're absolutely right. You could have been done. You could have to last as long as you did without having a major, not only just an incident on air, but just, you know, like life could have hit you somewhere and you could have been going left instead of right. And I mean, to sit and get to pick your brain for an hour is something I will never forget. And I just want to soak in all the knowledge you got in between your ears and see if there's some things to learn.
Well, to tell you the truth, as I said before, with the Lord, you know, I can hear a lot of guys, you know, listen to this guy talking, but it's a true story. And I do believe in the Lord. I go to church, try to go to church, and I was down. I just, nobody down out more than I was. I had nothing going at all, really. I had nothing. In fact, let's see, what year was that? That would have been back in the 60s, I think. I made a comeback, and like I told you earlier, but the thing was, so I've had a pretty good life, and as they say, there's a lot more. There's a lot of days behind me than there are in front of me. So, but I've had a good time. And the big thing is, my son Timothy is the guy that does it all, and I've been very fortunate. And like I said, those guys, I know some guys are listening right now that are unemployed. I know how you feel because I remember my mother phoning. They asked, "How are you doing?" I used to get mad at my mother. How am I doing? You're mad at your mother. And it was tough. And you have a good woman. I had a, you know, she never complained, and it was, I don't know what I would have done if she had complained and, you know, and had been whining all the time and everything. But she knew I'd somehow come out of it, and I think she did anyhow.
I read, and now this for all the ladies listening, when you talk about a good woman, I read in the minors you moved 53 times.
Yeah, and I remember Rose when we had a told her we were going to Three Rivers, and she was from Hershey. She had a lovely home in Hershey, and Hershey is like a paradise, you know. And she said, "Where's Three Rivers?" And I didn't know where Three Rivers, Quebec was either. And I remember taking a cardboard box, and she was taking the ketchup, the ketchup and the mustard and stuff like that. It was half full because we couldn't afford to buy new mustard. I remember the cardboard box putting in the half ketchup and stuff like that. We couldn't leave it because we couldn't afford to buy new stuff over there. And I remember halfway through, I had a car with bald tires on it. And I remember we were somewhere in Quebec. I don't know where it was. And the car wouldn't start. We'd get stopped for gas, and the car wouldn't start. And it was about 11 o'clock at night, and it was, you know, it was cold. It was right in the middle of winter. Let me out in the middle of winter. And we went into the coffee shop, and Cindy, my daughter, was with me. She was about, she'd be about three or four. And she'd be about three or four. And I said, "Now let's all pray that the car starts, because they were going to close up at 11. I don't know what we would have froze to death." And car started, and I was lost, and so I got there. We had to play, and hadn't eaten, and Rose went into a motel, and I played that afternoon. Imagine I get there, had to play that afternoon, and on the way, the guys that are listening, you'll see, and the guy said, "Come on, Don, you got to stop for one beer, you know." And I said, "Well, I better stop, you know, I better get back to the motel." And they said, no, "You better come on, you have one." "Well, you know, I have one and two." And all of a sudden, I look at the watch, and it's about 4 o'clock. Oh, you know, the game is over. Well, it must have been later than that, about 6 o'clock. And I got back to the motel, and Rose hadn't eaten for about 24 hours. She was eating chocolate bars. So I went and all the wives were at a place called the Golden Rooster. I'll never forget it. And Cindy came, and I give Cindy a bunch of dimes, and she played the one. They had one arm bandit. So anyhow, had roadkill with all the wives, and we, you know, back in those days, there was only six teams in the National Hockey League, and there was six teams in the American League, six teams in the Western League, and the Central League there was six. So that's, I think it was, it worked out to be about 18 or something like that. But there was, and defensemen, there was six, they carry five, so there was 30. There was 30 defensemen in the whole, in the National Hockey League. Now there, I think there's, they carry about eight, and there's about 30. So there's about three or 400 right then. But back in those days, if you didn't make the National Hockey League, you were the American League was good, was the second best. Western League was the third best in the Central League. The whole of all of hockey from the year before, like from back then, would be playing in the National Hockey League right now. But it was only 30. Imagine that, only 30 defensemen in the whole world in the National Hockey League. Hard to believe.
Hard to believe. That's fine company you were in.
Yeah, they were all good. They make the National Hockey League now. And it was tough hockey. It was big boy hockey back then. It was a lot tougher. I don't think it was better, but it was tougher. And the guys back then, there were maybe about three or four guys getting, really hammer a puck on a team. But now everybody can shoot a puck. I mean, everybody got those sticks and everything. And it's a lot different now than it was back in those days. And, I mean, I'm glad the players are making the money they're making now. I mean, we go in, I remember with Punch Shimlack, I signed my contract, and he said, "Don't you want it?" And I said, "Well, are you going to give me any more money?" No. I said, well, what's the sense of arguing with you? And Punch, he was in Springfield before he went to National Hockey League. He said, well, I'm going to National Hockey League. And a lot of people don't remember Punch Imlach. Punch Imlach was, I think he had won 4 Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I hit the tough guys. I hit Hap Ems in my junior. He was probably the smartest guy I ever played for, but he wasn't a very nice guy. And then I went to right from him, and I went to Eddie Shore. Geez, I hit the tough guys. I'll tell you, boy, there's nobody tougher in the world than Eddie Shore. He was a tough guy. We'll call him eccentric now. Back then, I think he was nuts, but we'll call him eccentric now, the way the world is going. We have to be careful.
What was one of the tough things that Mr. Shore had you do, maybe in a practice?
Well, that was a tough one. Brian Kilray, the winningest coach ever in junior hockey.
And a fantastic book, yeah. Don. That's a fantastic book.
There's a guy you should get on, too, is Brian Kilray. He got stories about Eddie Shore, more stories than anybody. But and Eddie Shore really liked him. And I didn't. He didn't like me. I don't know why. I guess I never said anything bad to him. He just didn't like me. And but he liked Brian Kilray. He liked guys that could skate with their knees bent. And unfortunately, I was one of those guys that stiff-legged skater. And he never liked me. And he thought I was too rough. Imagine Eddie Shore thinking I was too rough. He says, I remember him saying, Mr. Cherry, if you could visualize that in reality your maneuverability is nil, that's pretty good. I didn't know what he was talking about, but anyhow, he sent me to Three Rivers, and then I think a year later he sent me to Sudbury, Ontario. So he didn't like me, but he liked Brian Kilray. Boy, Brian Kilray could go an hour easy. He knows. He was with Eddie Shore. I think he liked Eddie Shore so much. He was with the L.A. Kings. He got the first goal for the L.A. Kings, and he wasn't, I don't know, he didn't like it there, and he has to go back to Springfield. I couldn't believe anybody would ask him back to Springfield, but he did. And he's the winning coach ever, and I think he's with 2,000 wins or something like that. Won the Memorial Cup Coach of the Year in OHL. So he's the guy you should get on, too.
You know, in your lifetime, in your career of playing in the minors, to coaching in the NHL, to being on Hockey Night in Canada and commentating and everything, can you believe how far hockey has come? Like, I mean, from the days of 6 teams to we're about to have 32, the money, the availability to watch games, you know, like growing up, it was Saturday night. That there wasn't much, you know. And if you're older than me, you remember the days of the radio and curl up around it, listening to Foster Hewitt and things like that.
I remember when we were young, we used to play. We used to skate all day at the school, Riddle School, and then we'd come home and we'd play a road hockey. And your mother would come in. My mother would come in and we'd have our bath. We'd have our cocoa, and we'd sit and we'd listen. We'd fall asleep after a while because we were young. And we used to listen to Foster Hewitt, and he never did the first period, eh? He did the second period. And somehow or other, just hearing the voice of Foster Hewitt give you chills. Just he was more popular than the players. And just listening to Foster Hewitt was really something. I know people can't believe it. listening to radio, but it was a big deal. And I suppose, hockey. And then back in early days, they were just Toronto Maple Leafs on. That's why they're so popular, I guess. But I remember when I was a little boy, listening to Foster Hewitt, and he'd come at the end of the first period. And he'd say the score is 3-0 for Toronto or something. And you know the players used to do something they don't do anymore. The only time they bang the boards is after a fight. You ever notice that? And but they used to bang it after a goal. And somehow you had a feeling close to the players. You could almost hear the players bang the boards. If you don't ever, and the players don't bang the boards now, except both teams bang the boards after a fight, which is you know, and they're trying to get, and the fighting is down. All the fighting is down and everything. The funny thing is, but the guy's making the money now. Holy guy. Guy's making $3 million that scored 14 goals. If you scored 14 goals before, you didn't hang around too long. But, McDavid, whatever money he's getting a lot of money. He deserves every penny because he's the best hockey player in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And I saw him when he was a minor. He was Bantam, actually. And he was terrific. And he was terrific back then. There's another guy he come up and play with, Roland McEwen. I remember he was a defenseman. I see somebody's picked him up. I forget who's picked him up now, but they both of them come up and played Bantam hockey for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And you knew David. You just saying, looking at him, boy, he's the best player in the world.
When you mention, well, A, as an Oilers fan, we get to see McDavid and Mr. Draisaitl do their magic every single night. Hopefully, sooner than later, we'll go a little deeper in the playoffs. I know a lot of this area, we've had a tough go for a few years, Don, but with some of the best players in the world suiting up for the Oil, it's been a lot of fun watching. Because I wasn't old enough to remember the glory days of the boys on the bus, of Gretzky and Messier, and the list goes on
they
and
never
on and
said
on.
The only time they were on the bus is when they went from the arena to the airplanes. Who are they kidding? Boys on the bus, back to the bus. I mean, that was whoever thought that up was boys on the bus. They all flew out there, and they had a great club. Where would they go on the bus? They never went anywhere on the bus. The only maybe they go to Calgary, and what up? I had to laugh when I read that boys on the bus. They never spend the bus. We used to spend 8 and 10 hours on the bus, and in the American Hockey League, that was the way we played. I mean, we got used to the bus. I went from junior hockey right to the American League, and I didn't know any difference. But I had to laugh when I saw the headlines, boys on the bus. But they had a great club, and you're very lucky out there to see you get to see McDavid. I know they don't go far in the playoffs and Draisaitl. But at least you get to see McDavid, the best player in the world, and you know the fans are pretty good there. They don't boo, I've always said that. I'm not saying that because I know that the Oilers fans are listening to that. But they, if you listen to them, they don't boo the power play, which is, well, I guess even when they had a bad power play, they don't have a bad power play now, but they had a bad power play back then. And they didn't boo, which was great. I, as a player, I used to appreciate that because every other city does the same thing. They boo the power play. And Montreal, they boo the power play. And Toronto here, it's not going, they boo. So as a player, I always remembered that they didn't boo the power play. Funny, eh?
You know, you talk about greats, McDavid, and then, you know, just in passing of Gretzky and the boys. Your first year coaching, I'm a defenseman, Don. I've heard the stories. It's probably why I enjoy him embarrassing the Flames so much on your Rock'em Sock'em tape, is Bobby Orr is arguably, from anyone who saw him play, the best player ever. And that is, so many people talk about that. What was it about Bobby Orr, A, that was just so bloody impressive, but two, you would have been around when he signs with the Chicago Blackhawks, and I've read the stories on it, but maybe you can impart some wisdom from being around it back then.
Well, I know there's young defensemen listening out there, but and I'll give you just the year he played for me. He had 46 goals. Now, that's hard to believe.
No kidding.
46 goals. He had 89 assists, and he was plus 123. And he had over 100 minutes in penalties. I mean, when you think of that, I mean, that just tells you enough who's the great. And he's unbelievable. I mean, the big thing about him, he could skate. Him and Coffey, Coffee was the same type of skater, only he used to go on the outside, and Bobby, unfortunately, used to go to the inside. And when you went to the inside, back in those days, they really hit. And that's why, you know, a lot of people don't realize that he retired at 28 years old. 28 years old. And defensemen, if you look at Coffey and that, they were just coming into their prime at 28. And a defenseman, as you know, you played, you just started to learn the game. It takes you that long almost, and he retired at the top, at the very top. Let's see, he won the scoring title twice as a defenseman. And he went to Team Canada. He was picked the MVP, and then he went to Chicago. And nobody ever saw him at Chicago because I think he only played about 17 games or something like that. So nobody ever saw him on the way down. That's why everybody or anybody that saw him play, and nobody ever saw him on his way down because we all, you know, you get older. But they only saw him at the very top, and imagine that, 46 goals. Coffey was close to that. I forget what, but Coffey was, him and Coffey were the best skaters I ever saw.
One, I'd read, and maybe even Ron had said this too, about your love or fascination with Hollywood, whether it be movies, commercials, etc. I mean, you're iconic for your suits and just the way you presented yourself, which will be forever emblazed on my brain. What was it about Hollywood that you enjoyed so much, Don?
I don't know. I get all the books on them, and I like Anthony Hopkins and guys like that, and Errol Flynn, and I just don't know. And I read all the books on the producers. I read that one book. It was by Robert Evans, The Kid Stands in the Picture. And I don't know. I go from Hollywood to Sir Francis Drake and Lord Nelson, and I think if you read the books on Sir Francis Drake or Lord Nelson, you'll see how my philosophy in life is. And I don't know why it is with Hollywood. I was always reading books, though, sometimes. Ron used to make fun of me. I'd read the books on Joan Crawford or somebody like that. And I would always hide the cover, because people would make fun of you then. But I did. I always read all the stories on, you know, I've got all the books, but Sir Francis Drake and Lord Nelson to me, and Shackleton, and guys like that. I used to read about books all the time and everything. I don't know why, but I just did. And he used to make fun of me all the time.
I watched a documentary here. It was kind of a mini-series documentary kind of thing, and part of it was behind the scenes of Coach's Corner. And I understand a bit, but I was always very impressed on how much time you guys spent, and specifically you, on what you were going to say on your segments. I don't think the average person realizes how much time Don was spending figuring out what he was going to say and running it by guys and making sure that it was the right thing or maybe the most impactful thing?
Well, I tell you the truth, I used to have Kathy Broderick. She was there. She had red hair, I remember. She was just, and she'd pick things out. And she'd tell me before, you know, we talked about Saturday morning. But I didn't go over with Ron. We used to, at 9:30, and he used to get up. But we used to talk. We used to talk over. And he can you mention this? Can you mention that? I noticed they don't mention the Allen Cup and things like that anymore. That was a big thing with me because the Amateur Cup. I don't know why. And I used to have a lot of fun. Well, the big thing is that I did what I didn't, and I think that what got me in trouble is that that a lot of people didn't like it. But I used to try to do it. If older hockey players would watch it, and it seemed to work out pretty good. But if the older hockey players would like it, I didn't want them to think I was a phony. I remember a lot of things we said, yeah, I don't want to do that. But I used to talk about the older players a lot. I think a lot of people, I used to get sick of me talking about Bobby Orr, I guess. But I used to have a lot of fun.
I think you talking about the older players and the stories from the past was what made it so genuine to me, right? Like, you're talking about your experience. You had a career, man. Like, all the years in the minors, making the Stanley Cup Finals, Coach of the Year. Just listening about it here this morning is, like I say, it's something I won't soon forget. Here's one for you that's a blast from the past, Don. I did not realize this, and I assume people from our area maybe knew at the time, or maybe it's been long forgotten. But I had read a story last night that said when the Saskatoon Blues were going to be a thing, the St. Louis Blues, for people who recall, were going to move to Saskatoon, become the Saskatoon Blues. Bill Hunter was bringing them here. I think it was 1983.
Well, Bill, yeah.
And you had agreed to be the head coach.
Yeah, and we were one step away, and he brought me to the arena and showed me the arena. He said we can put another 5,000 on each end, and we can get up around 16,000. We were all set to go, and somebody stepped in a checker dome down there. I forget the guy's name. Anyhow, he bought the club, and they did not want to go. They said that it really makes me laugh. That was before, they said Edmonton. They said the people out west, they didn't realize the people out west will drive 200 miles to see a game. Doesn't mean a thing. And, Bill, he had it all set up, boy, and him and Vi and his wife, and they were all set to go. And he was, boy, did he ever promote? I'll tell you that. It would have been a success. We'd still be going. But we're only one guy away, and one guy stepped in and bought it. And the NHL said hockey at West will never go. Boy, are they wrong.
They were wrong because, as we know in Saskatchewan here, and you've hit the nail on the head, people are willing to drive an awful long ways to see professional
Nothing
sports.
Yet.
Just take a look at the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I tell you what, they got the best fans probably across any sport.
Absolutely.
Because it's the only professional, now they have the Rush, but at the time, it was the only professional sports Saskatchewan had. So I married a girl from Minnesota, and I was at a Vikings game, and sure enough, there's the green Saskatchewan Rough Riders jerseys walking around, and being a Saskatchewan boy, you got to go talk to them now, and then you sit there and have a beer with them, and it's awesome, and that's what Saskatchewan, they're proud of where they're from, and they're proud of their team. And if the St. Louis or Saskatoon Blues had ever happened, Don, you probably would have been an absolute legend in Saskatchewan, bigger than you are right now. And the Blues would probably be one of the strongest teams right now, I bet, because
if it ever came to
Saskatchewan, they never would have let him leave.
Never. They had a brand new arena, and he could put 5,000, and we're all set to go. And I was all set to go, too. I was really looking forward to it. By golly, some guy stepped in, and the National League gave it to him. I think we were going to pay more money in the whole deal and everything. It didn't make any difference. They did not want a team out west. Boy, can you imagine that? We've been like the Rough Riders. We would be packing them in still out there, and it was terrific. Wild Bill was so disappointed. I remember phoning me, telling me that somebody had stepped in, but he thought he hadn't, and that would have been. But we would have been packing them in, still packing them in there, and boy, what a team that would have been.
Well, one other team that you coached that is no more was the Colorado Rockies, and I did not realize this until I started doing some research on it, Don. That watching you growing up, the name Hardy Astrom everybody knew it, the Swedish Sieve, right? Like and then I started reading the story on the Colorado Rockies, and I'm like, oh my God, Hardy Astrom was the goalie there. I'm like, Well, that makes sense, right? I guess I just, as a kid, I always thought it funny how the stories went. The Colorado Rockies.
He wasn't a bad guy.
No, I don't.
He wasn't a bad guy. His only
problem just couldn't stop a puck.
Yeah. Well, he was with New York, I think, and we ended up with him. And I think the general manager, Ray Miron, had signed him to pretty big money. So he let us die with him. And, you know, the big thing we had, Dougie Favelle, who was about nine, and he had, and I found out later, he had a big argument with Ray Miron. And I couldn't figure out why we didn't have Dougie Favelle. And he had a big argument with a guy named, he was general manager. And I remember he gave me a book and when I first went there. And all I know about hockey, he opened it up and had blank pages. Little did I know. But I remember Hardy, he wasn't a bad guy. He just, you know, he really wasn't a bad guy. He was from, I think he was from Sweden. His only problem was pucks. And we had a pretty good club. We had Rene Robert, we had Bobby Schmatz, we had Lanny McDonald. Lanny McDonald got 25 goals in 45 games. We had a real good club. What killed us was our goal. I went from Boston Bruins that had terrific two goalies, the Jilly Gilbert and Jerry Cheevers, to Hardy Astrom. I paid the price. I wonder what Hardy's doing. I think he's coaching now. I hope he's got a good goaltender.
Well, he became famous off the con. Well, like I say, Hardy Astrom, the name just sticks with me even to this day because I just remember the Swedish sieve. Oh, those are great memories.
I remember the very first practice we had. You flipped it in. I flipped it, the puck to him, and he missed it. I went home, and I said to Rose, I said, you better be ready. I said, I don't think we're going to be here around too long with that goaltender. And we weren't. And I think he stayed for the 2 years after I left too. And then they moved to New Jersey, I think it was.
Yeah, New Jersey. Yeah.
New Jersey. I think it had to be they were ready to pack it in. Another team die like that because we had a pretty good club.
Well, I'll slide it into our final segment here, Don. Once again, do really appreciate you coming on. The Crude Master Final Five, a shout-out to Heath and Tracy McDonald, the supporters of the podcast since the very beginning. It's just five quick questions for you, Don, and then I'll let you get on with your day. The first one always is, if you could sit down, and I know you've sat down with a lot of people, but if you could have one person to sit down with that you haven't had yet, or maybe you'd like to do again, Who would you want to sit and have a beverage with just to pick their brain?
Well, live, you mean live or in the past would be Sir Francis Drake. I would like to talk to him and learn how he became such a leader. And but I think Bobby Orr I talked to him quite a bit. And I think Bobby Orr.
Okay.
And you know, you're dropping a few names there, but him and I talked quite a bit.
If you were commissioner of the NHL for a day and could either put in a rule or take out a rule, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I'd get the icing straightened out. I mean, that is still, but I think the instigator rule is the worst rule ever put into hockey. A guy that starts the fight could get 10, 7, and you have a guy sticking. No, instigator rule, that would be the one rule I'd take out. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, but I have to admit that Gary Bettman, doing a pretty good job. The salaries have gone from about Zippo to, I can't knock Gary Bettman. I have no affiliation or anything now, but he's done a pretty good job with the money the guys are making.
Well, my favorite player to this day growing up, I got a picture of him and Gordy sitting in the studio here with Steve Yzerman, his Steve Yzerman. I was wondering if you got a Steve Yzerman story.
Well, you know, you see that picture of him, and they sported on Sportsnet of scoring that goal. It was a great goal. It was the top corner, an overtime goal.
Yeah.
And he let it go. A lot of people don't realize, and he was jumping around. Players jumped on him and hurt his knee. He couldn't play. He got hurt doing the celebration. And you'll see that goal quite a bit because it's a great goal. He shoots it from the right-hand side, and he puts it in the top corner, and you see him jumping around. A lot of people don't realize, but he was a great little guy. He was protected by the Brewis brothers, Joey Kosher and Bobby Probert. And he always gave credit to those two guys, that and Bobby Probert and Joey Kosher. So Iserman, he's got a good job now. I don't know what he's trying to do in Detroit. And did a great job in Tampa. And I think he wants to stay in Detroit. Well, I hope I always cheer for Detroit because of Stevie Iserman.
Yeah, he's always loved how he conducted himself and still conducts himself. And when he was on one knee in the playoffs, their last run, man, was there anything more, I don't know, endearing? Like, I mean, just like, man, you want to see that guy win. Like, you could just tell shift hurt.
He blocked shots, and he had a bad knee. I know he had a bad knee, and he's still blocking shots. And everybody loved if you don't love Stevie Eiserman for the way he played, heart and soul, he was the heart and soul of Detroit, of all those great clubs.
The nickname Grapes. Now, obviously, last name Cherry, to me, it probably makes sense. But was there a guy, or how did the nickname Grapes come up?
Well, Jerry Yeaman, he was from out west. And he was a great guy, and he gave me he was kidding me all the time, just to play on the name Cherry. And Jerry Eamon was the guy that gave me that name, and he played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think he got 11 assists one. He really played well, and he played with me in Springfield, and he was great. I always thought he'd be a great coach, and he ended up a scout for the Islanders, I think it was, but it was Jerry Eamon that gave me the name, and he was a good guy. He would have been a great coach.
Your final one. I was watching some of your earliest interviews that I could find, and one of the questions you used to ask the NHL players that I really enjoyed was, "Who's helped you on your way? Who helped Grapes on his way?"
Well, Bob Clark, I'd have to say, one of the owners for. He got me to coach the high school team. He says, "You're not doing anything. You're unemployed." I said, "True." And he was the guy that gave me the call that, do we want to coach, the Rochester Americans all these night? And I had no money coming in. And he says, "Don't you even want to know how much we're paying you?" I said, "No, I just want the chance." So I'd say the Lord, first of all. And then Bob Clark was the guy that got me started. And I know nobody's ever heard of Bob Clark, but he was from Rochester, New York, and he was the guy that got me started, first of all with the high school and then with the Rochester Americans.
One bonus one then for you, Don, is maybe what's one of the best lessons you learned along the way?
Huh, I never had that one asked me. Well, say what you mean and mean what you say. Got me fired at the end, but I always meant what I said. I think the people saw that I wasn't a phony. I never wanted to be a phony, and everything I said on television, I meant every word of it, and unfortunately, it got me fired. But you have to do what you have to do.
Appreciate it, you coming on, Don. It's been an absolute treat. And
this is the longest one I've ever done in my life, and I can see you're a good guy, and that's why I did it. My voice is starting to go. I haven't done it in a long time, and God love you, and keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Don. Hey, folks, thanks again for joining us today. If you just stumbled on the show and like what you hear, please click subscribe. Remember, every Monday and Wednesday, a new guest will be sitting down to share their story. The Sean Newman Podcast is available for free on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you find your podcast fix. Until next time.